Hi, I'm Maisie Cohen, and welcome to Rhyming the Dead, a Red Room Company radio series produced with the assistance of the Community Radio Network. Over 5 episodes, we'll hear new works from 10 poets around the country, who are asked to reflect on a dead poet of their choice, and how that person's life and death has profoundly influenced their writing. Today, what lessons do Tupac and Maya Angelou have to teach our poets Abe Nook and Celestine Roe from beyond the grave? Both poets wrote open and unflinching self-portraits that garnered them widespread fame. And though one died at the age of 25 and the other only last year at the age of 86, the resonances and relevance of their words continue to be felt. Tupac Shakur was born in Harlem, New York City in 1971. From a young age, he was surrounded by family members who were active in the Black Panther Party, and these values came to shape the music he would go on to make, writing about violence, urban hardship, and racism in America. Adelaide-based poet Celestine Roe.
I chose Tupac because not many people knew that he was a poet before he was a rapper. A lot of his words, they still mean stuff to everybody in this day and age, especially to the struggling coloured people all around the world.
Did you hear his music first or his poetry first?
Well, I heard his music first. I liked his lyrics, and then I looked him up and I discovered that he had written a whole heap of poems before that. He was one of the first artists that I got into because of his writing. That was when I was about 16. It's time for our young people to rise. Take the fight lay before us. Let's rise to the challenges. We'll fight against depression, oppression, suicide, genocide, displacement, child rights. They say we're equal. We bleed the same, but we're not treated the same. In our land, it's not the same. We're made to feel like it's our fault. History hidden behind government cloak. Truth hidden behind exaggerated lies of what was. But we know we're still living it. Belongs to us. Brothers and sisters and uncles and aunties still falling and dying to the system. Let's rise to the occasion. Let's tell the world our government system's failing. To the people that were here first, to many generations displaced and hurt, we stand up because we should. Our people still hurt, for our mob, for the voices mistook. We fight for reasons anyone without understanding cannot stand. They say we're equal, then when? Was it the 1967 referendum? Then if so, why haven't we been included in the government's so-called constitution? And why we still got to be recognised in the white eyes, racist eyes? Everybody understands but them rednecks. We fight for the little babies taken away in this day and age. We cry, we shed tears for them because I imagine it could have been mine. I stand up for the good ones, the families who fight to keep it strong. Still them government think they're doing justice. A poor mother on welfare has no justice. Her baby gets taken away. Another fight before her lays. Instead of fighting the system, she's fighting for her life, attempted suicide. Who are we supposed to be when it's all ripped up for greed? We have no more stories, them 100-year leases with them, all the so-called glories. And what about my brothers out bush that want to work and teach the young how the world's supposed to be? They get sent away from home and everything is not as glorious as portrayed. This was and always will be Aboriginal land. Well, it's a slam poetry protest piece. I wrote it after a massive Aboriginal protest rally that I've been to. It does repeat a lot of words just to get feelings out there and to make people listen to, you know, what it's like for Aboriginal people and the issues that face our mob.
And what do you see as being some of the biggest issues facing Aboriginal people at the moment?
The government policies that they've included on to Aboriginal people, especially in Northern Territory, with the intervention that disempowered a lot of people. And a lot of people through it has, you know, had depression. And through my writing, I want people to have some sort of empathy or feeling as to why we are angry about what's going on at the moment. Power to the struggle, whatever that may be, whatever you're feeling, rise higher. Give it all you got, because you're stronger. No matter what life throws at you, jump up because you know you're good, and don't let them bring you down. I want to see that face, frown to smile replace. Have faith because we know you can do it. We'll back you up and help you push on through it. Don't be afraid to ask for help if need, and be that person you always want to be.
You're listening to Rhyming the Dead, and I'm speaking to Celestine Rowe about her poetic reflections on the life of Tupac Shakur.
I noticed that in New South Wales and also in my hometown in Alice Springs, a lot of people that listened to Tupac were also, you know, they were proud to be black. But then again, they also fell down the same trap as listening to rap, you know, doing naughty stuff.
In some interviews, he was talking about the absence of family heirlooms for black American people because of the history of slavery. He says, the only thing we could really leave behind is culture, music, and dignity. I liked one of the lines in one of your poems, "We have no more stories." I felt like that sort of echoed what Tupac was saying.
Yeah, they've lost all their culture and that sort of stuff. And a lot of the people are still lost, but they find their own acceptance in each other. And I was in Redfern. When I was 17, I went down there when everybody used to hang out there, and I asked these young kids, I said, oh, where are you guys from? And they said, oh, we're from here. You know, they'd lost the whole gap in their stories, their family. They didn't know their cultural connections or anything, and all they knew was the city life. A lot of them felt lost, and they didn't know who they were. And as for me, growing up with a white family, and being away from my biological family, I felt the same thing. You know, even though I had a family, I didn't know who I was myself. I love this city. Creativeness, words, they flow. From the gutters to the tips of high-rise buildings. Artistic alleyways. Amongst the stenched-up heaps of rubbish. Discarded from the rich. As they feel their hunger and ego in restaurants of gold. One of these restaurants opened up, and people were saying how, like, it cost something $1,000 to get in or something like that, something ridiculous. And you could see down the alleyways all the rubbish and the graffiti on the walls and pictures and all that sort of stuff. I've got a poem that he wrote that was sort of like inspired me to write this city. The rose that grew from the concrete. Did you hear about the rose that grew from a crack in the concrete? Proving nature's law is wrong. It learned to walk without having feet. Funny it seems, but by keeping its dreams, it learnt to breathe fresh air. Long live the rose that grew from the concrete when no one else ever cared. We rose up from the darkness where they kept us all along. We shined bright, smiling, never letting go of what could become. The vision held inside, we grabbed them tight. The dreams, even though it seemed forever to become real, I held them in my heart. Kept them all hid. As I continued down the path, blackness dark and wicked. Then, from darkness like a phoenix we rose, the dark with light replaced, born hard like a diamond in the rough, born here in this crazy world, born tough. I know myself how hard it is to be strong when you're faced with racism, and people look at me because I'm actually really dark. They rather talk to a light-skinned person or a whiter person because they feel that I don't understand what they're talking about. When I was working with radio, everyone thought that I was white or lighter than I actually was until they met me, and they freaked out. So, you know, the people think that we drink and smoke and sniff and we're lazy and we don't want to work and that sort of stuff. And I also included we're born tough because we're from the territory and we're from the bush and we're living in the desert and that.
Another thing Tupac said was, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. I know if I keep talking about how dirty it is out here, somebody's going to clean it up. Do you think that writing about the problems in society is going to help create positive change?
I believe it will, because either people are going to disagree or people are going to help fix the problem or actually sit down and listen to the people. You know, I get angry when they don't understand what's going on and they tell people to change, but it's not easy.
There's a poem that Tupac wrote in the event of my demise, which sort of predicted his own death or was fearful of that, perhaps.
I think because he was straight out and he said a lot of things that people didn't like at the time.
Do you ever think about your own mortality?
I used to think about death. My interpretation of it is that we go to the stars, and therefore it doesn't really worry me.
That was Indigenous writer and broadcaster Celestine Rowe speaking to me about her poems inspired by Tupac. And you're listening to Rhyming the Dead. Where does one begin describing the life of Maya Angelou? She was a prolific author, publishing 7 autobiographies and several books of poetry. She was a dancer, an actress, a singer, a prostitute, a journalist, and an activist. She was a woman of many faces, but spoke with one unwavering voice that seemed to utter the words everyone else wanted to say or needed to hear.
Abe Nook was born in Sudan and came to Australia with his mother and siblings as refugees in 2004. The spoken word poet and youth mentor says his mother and her decision to bring the family to a new life in Australia embodies the strength of a figure like Maya Angelou.
When I first became aware of Maya Angelou, it was actually when I started the journey of wanting to express myself, and I was illiterate. And one of the most frightening things at the time was being exposed. I was a poet in public because of my memory. But whenever people asked of my writings, I would always tell a lie and run away from it. And so my hearing one of her poems, Mask, and especially when I admitted to myself my own flaws and never having to express doubts within me, that's when I became aware of Maya Angelou, hearing that very first poem of Mask. And I think internally I've accepted myself. I know why the caged bird sang. When I first picked it up, I couldn't read. So I was, of course, lip-syncing the alphabet. So that's how I was reading. But of course, as soon as I began to put the sentences together, it was so much so trying to withhold my excitement. I mean, how can one person go through so much and yet be willing to be in public and share in spite of the atrocities that have happened in her life? It's just realizing how much women go through and the decisions they make to either, the decisions that women make either make or break a family. And my mother, of course, has been one of a mother to 8 children, and yet being selfless, that's what stood out. The world is a mixture of everybody everywhere. And she was a child and shall remain so in the eyes of those who came before her. It matters not where from to make us feel, she made us laugh. And the best gift of all was when she made us think the best way to impart intelligence, sprinkling wisdom upon our temples. She wrote books which serve as notes, love letters to all children, teaching why the cage bird sang. And our curiosity is sprung to keep up with how she endured life in its harsh conditions. The songs she sang reminded us of her presence, because she gave words meaning when she spoke, especially when people spoke of worry and anxiety. Her words made us settle. And how phenomenal of a woman, astounding were her teaching, because now we are aware why the cage bird sang. It sang of the freedom it envisioned. Within every living being, there's a candlelight. No matter how hard the wind blows, it will never blow off. She lived, she laughed, she smiled and cried, so her children can be reminded of what life is and what we should encounter without hesitance. Life with love and laughter. To never turn away from the tears and smiles that glitter the sky, because it is when we look up, the stars look down. She home now. Maya Angelou's home.
This is Rhyming the Dead, and I'm speaking to Abe Nook about the impact Maya Angelou has had on him and his poetry.
When you write a poem or when you write anything in general, you have this ideology of trying to impart something that has happened to you. But of course, in this instance, it was being the bystander and just going, I'm not going to try and express this. I'm going to let it express itself. And of course, the journey of starting a poem, of course, once you know how it's going to end, it pretty much takes away the enthusiasm. So this is one of those moments where I wrote it down first, of course, longhand, and I let the pen guide me. And of course, the line that came after that was, within every human being, there's a candlelight. No matter how hard the wind blows, it would never blow off. It's literally not having a full stop, just using commas so that whatever needed to express itself kind of expressed itself. And it was a journey of trust, and I had to trust myself in that. I had to remove myself from the equation and let that spark of her influence show. She grew up in times when segregation was evident, and yet once again, when you speak of selflessness and how times have changed and how consistency with love and affection for everybody and anybody at any time, that's what's staggeringly motivating.
It just seems like everything that came out of her mouth could have been a quote. Where did this extraordinary wisdom come from, do you think?
She grew up with her grandmother, and the affection that came from the household and the surroundings, that's where it came from. And I think it did not come of biasness or of self-pity. It came because it was the realization of treating everybody equally. In her poem, The Mask, she says, "My life has been one great big joke, a dance that's worked, a song that spoke. I laughed so hard I nearly choked." You start to realize, really, all of what you're going through, and when you're caught in the dance floor of life, you can't be caught staring. You want to be caught, you want to be the one caught dancing.
My time is not long here. I gotta lay this body down. I got the hounds on my trail. It's the cross before the crown. We're gonna die anyway. Let's make a difference. It's hard to tell what's real. It gets harder every day. The direction's so clear. Obstacles are in the way. We're gonna die anyway. Let's make a difference. I know that we
Has thinking about her life and what it meant changed the way that you think about life and death?
Absolutely. I mean, death is something that we're not in control of, which means we pretty much just have to think and get excited about the prospect of the things that we can do now. And if you're only excited about the things that you can do for yourself, it doesn't go any further. But if you get excited about the things that you can do for other people, you start to realize you really do have the energy to get to doing things, because it's beyond you. It's learning to remove yourself from the equation on a daily basis, where you're not just selfish, but you're selfless for other people's well-being. Yeah.
That was Melbourne-based poet Abe Nook. And before wrapping up this episode, I wanted to revisit some of my favourite poems from the series so far. Here is part 4 of Fiona Britton's poem Summoning the River Snake, written for Dorothy Porter, Sam Wagon Watson's Wiped, written for Martin Harrison, and the end of Bella Lee's poem Rambo in Africa.
4. Hear this, it wasn't as you describe. I took this life to town, showed it off, gadded it about, swung it, gave it hot kisses, holidayed it. Then rolled it lovingly in a tomb raider's embalming cloth and tucked it between two sheets, then shot my pistol in the air. Comet. You snuck, pen between your teeth, shape shifter, half chimera, into guises, a web-handed amphibian, a comet's tail. Let me end in fire on a night of low smog, bright on the horizon. Desire strapped rockets to your feet, and you went sprawling akimbo, staring, rapt, saw that longings form galaxies, that all one's deaths are written and collude. Apprenticed, you did magic, pressed your hands to your lover's body, then raised them aloft. Strange celestial fire trailed your fingers, filled the room with smoke.
Wiped for Martin Harrison. A quote from Apollinaire. I sing the joy of wandering and the pleasure of the wandering death. I replay your voice with every word I borrow from the dictionary again and again as it hits a page embedded. And as the words get harder, your voice gets weaker in memory, and I fear if I keep writing, well, you know what will happen. Visions of the road become overexposed in my mind, journeys we took, words you shared with me that I tried to pass to others in kind. Acoustic resonance in our textual scapes, lyrical tracks, and precious liner notes that I hold close from being consciously wiped.
Footsteps in the hall. In autumn, my last ship. Where outside the sun, the weather. Recalling again how many I had read, so often blind. I wish you good health and prosperity, fine weather, and a good time. Curious fact to come back, to pay so dearly in sleep, so to bury. Along railings, brief chaos. Forgetting for a moment, footsteps sounding in the interior. Dining chairs, those blonde grand arcades set back against, long paths and low. We had repaired, drifting into blue some vault through childhood white tomb boxed walls. D. When will you leave again? A. As soon as possible. Those winter nights on the road, little Rambo, from door to door on its hinge, in the wind that passed walking itself, bridge to, across sullen star, red path and the child returned by way of flight, by way of shadow to itself. In night, in the shadow of the corridors, by dark edges illumined, passes through his life like a meteor. Dear lights disappearing, one by one along the bridge, my star passing, passes. In Paris, the crowd surges around the Hôtel de Ville.
That's all from Rhyming the Dead. The music in this episode was produced by Marianth Lukataris, Edwin Montgomery, Mary Webb, Kari Wendell McClelland, and Dudley Yaranigi. You can download all the episodes in this series from our website. Just head to redroomcompany.org. I'm Maisie Cohen. Thanks for being with me on this poetic journey through life and death.